How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
Here's Diaw, fakes the pass, dribbles into the paint, spins, kicks out, pass, jumped by Rubio. Ricky makes the steal. Into the front court, bounce pass to Akhundi Shabazz Muhammad, who flushes with the left hand. What a feed by the Spanish sensation Ricky Rubio. Oh, Dios mio. He set that up perfectly. With eyes in the back of his head, he saw Shabazz streaking down the floor from midcourt. And Ricky was almost to the top of the key at that point.
You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 1st of June. Is Ricky Rubio available from Minnesota? We sit down with Locked On Wolves, and the NBA Finals finally get going. It's all up today on Locked On Jazz. Pow. How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. Thanks so much for tuning in today. Glad to have you aboard. Today's show is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter's doing a really neat job, another one of these great technology companies, changing the way in which hiring is done. I'm using them for the Locked On Podcast Network as we're looking at the possibility of hiring a national sales person to sell the NBA channel in its entirety, and looking to see if I can find somebody via ZipRecruiter, and it's been incredibly easy and simple to do. I'll tell you more about them. You can do the same, by the way, by going to ZipRecruiter.com and then using LO Jazz as your way to get your free trial with ZipRecruiter. So kind of a cool deal for you. ZipRecruiter.com/LOJazz. I'll tell you more about them in a minute. All right. Today's show, we're going to talk a little NBA Finals. And then we have an extended conversation with Zach Bennett of Locked On Wolves about Ricky Rubio, who he is as a player, and is he available? Okay? So that's the plan. Let's get right to the NBA Finals. My first instinct is Warriors in five, blowouts, they're too good, they're getting transition. The play that jumps to mind from the Jazz-Warriors series still is Warriors switch through a possession, Zaza Pachulia ends up, I think, outside on some guy at about 14 feet, shot goes up, shot's no good, rebound Draymond Green. Green brings it up the floor. Green and Gobert battle for the rebound. Green brings up the floor. Everybody sprints the floor. And the Jazz do seemingly everything right. They match up to Thompson. They match up to Curry. They match up to Durant at the three-point line in transition. Somebody, I don't remember whom, comes out to get the ball to stop Draymond. And now Rudy Gobert is starting 15 feet behind Zaza Pachulia and in a battle with Draymond Green for the rebound. And Pachulia sprints the floor, and Draymond hands it to Pachulia for the slam dunk. And he was the last guy down, and he's 15 feet ahead of Rudy, and there's nothing Rudy could have done. And I have watched that play a ton of times and still can't figure out where I think the Jazz made a mistake. Like, are you really leaving Steph, Clay, or Durant wide open for three? I mean, you obviously can't just give up a dunk, but that's the level it's at. And, you know, you'll hear the phrase, off a miss in transition defense, you just match up to the guy that's closest. Well, that's exactly what the Jazz did there. But because Pachulia was switched out of 15 feet when he released and Gobert's battling for a rebound, Gobert's behind the play. And everybody did what they were supposed to do, except for that. And the Warriors' ability to have four guys bring the ball up the floor, five if they have the right roster on, all of them spot up to shoot, incredible space, hit you with that speed, then have the ball moving offensively and never stop. to me, I assume is more than Cleveland can handle, and maybe more than anyone can handle. And then the presence of Durant, that if all fails, they can go to Durant one-on-one. Now, with that said, what's interesting to me is the best player is LeBron. The best isolation player is Kyrie. Kevin O'Connor wrote a great piece on The Ringer, not that Kevin O'Connor, the NBA writer, about the rise of isolation. We talk about it on Locked in NBA with the Coach. Locked in NBA with the Coach is really good. Go listen to that before game one. Really good. And, you know, if you can get this game close late, it's into an isolation game. I like Cleveland more in isolation late matchups than I do the Warriors. I think the Warriors aren't sure where they're going. Durant has a tendency to take tougher shots than I think he needs to. So I actually like the Cavaliers. So I don't know if it can get to 92-92 with 5 minutes left, but if it does get to 92-92 with 5 minutes left, I kind of like Cleveland. Cleveland's bench is terrific. Cleveland shoots more threes than the Warriors. Cleveland makes more threes than the Warriors. If it gets into a shooting contest, I don't know that the Warriors win that shooting contest. I don't know that Cleveland can stop Golden State. I think it's a minor issue, but I think the time off is an advantage to Cleveland, a disadvantage to Golden State. I think the pressure is an advantage to Cleveland, a disadvantage to Golden State. I think the pressure is all on Golden State. I think Cleveland somehow is the defending champ, comes in with a chip on their shoulder, and gets to play as the team that's being doubted. And I think that makes it particularly interesting in that regard. Early matchup things to watch in the game. How good are Golden State's looks? Are they just able to get good, particularly above the break, three-point looks against Cleveland and that they're doing? Two, who is Kevin Love guarding and how are the Warriors going at it? Three, how often are you seeing Steph Curry on defending the ball for the Warriors? Is Cleveland able to get Steph Curry into place? Four, offensive rebounding by Cleveland. Are they getting extra opportunities on the glass with Tristan Thompson and Kevin Love, and are they denying Golden State the ability to run by getting those opportunities? Those are the things. The last one I would tell you that no one's talking about. Shots in the restricted area. These are the number one and number two teams shooting in the restricted area. Can you get who's getting the shots in the restricted area? That's probably who's out in transition or who's being able to dribble penetrate. All right, those are my thoughts on the NBA Finals. Should be awesome. Enjoy it. Before we turn the focus over to Locked On Wolves and Zach Bennett and the quest for Ricky Rubio, today's show is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. You know what? If you think about the NBA Finals, we've got a bunch of All-Stars, right? Well, that's what you want for your team. So to go hire All-Stars, you've really got to get the word out, spread it. And what ZipRecruiter does so well is that they can post your job to 100 job sites with one click. That powerful technology now brings the right people to you. You have a better chance of getting the All-Star. Think about it from a drafting standpoint in the NBA draft. If you go and only watch 7 of the talent or only get exposed, your chances of finding the hidden gem are pretty limited. But if you can go get it out to all 100 job sites, then you're going to find your talent. You're also going to find it faster, which is great. 80% of the jobs on ZipRecruiter get qualified candidate in just 24 hours. No juggling emails, no calls to the office. Simply screen, rate, and manage candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. We're using it for the Locked On Podcast Network as we're looking for a national salesperson. It's ZipRecruiter.com/LOJazz. And you can right now, you can start forming your own winning team for free. Try it for free today. ZipRecruiter.com/LOJazz. and you'll find out how you can get your all-star team together. Find your hidden gem by using ZipRecruiter.com/LOJazz. All right, the quest for a point guard. If you didn't hear yesterday's show with Kellen Olson, Locked on Suns, very interesting conversation with what you do to get Eric Bledsoe. It takes us a while in this one, but we get to an interesting proposal for Ricky Rubio. It's clear that getting a point guard for the Jazz is going to get painful. Tomorrow we'll talk with Sean Woodley of the Locked on Raptors about Corey Joseph. But here is the next edition of Search for a Point Guard. Zach Bennett of Locked on Wolves joins us now. And Zach, as the Jazz search for this point guard, at this point last year, Rubio's the point guard. You draft Chris Dunn, and immediately everyone says, Rubio's done. Dunn's the point guard of the future. Dunn has, quite frankly, a rookie year that, at least from 30,000 feet, makes you say, uh-oh, what do we have? Where is the point guard position trending in Minnesota? Is Rubio still one that most people think will be moved? What's your feeling on Rubio's position with the Timberwolves right now?
Well, he's certainly the best point guard on the roster currently. The Chris Dunn debacle, you encapsulated that perfectly. The rumors were swirling after draft day, and they continue to swirl as Tom Thibodeau reportedly looks for another point guard in the field of draft prospects. But he's in many ways, he had his best season. He averaged 11 points, nearly 10 rebounds. He drew on yet another coach, dealt with another front office shakeup, and all while being on a rather financially, you know, decent contract for the Wolves themselves. So the tender that he signed with Flip Saunders not too many years ago is looking pretty good right now. It's going to take a lot from the Jazz in this conversation to pry him from Tom Thibodeau's hands, I think, because, you know, much like Rick Adelman, I think Ricky Rubio, with his work ethic, particularly on the defensive end, and his improvement on the offensive end, grew on yet another coach in Minnesota. And I think Tom Thibodeau grew to like him over the course of the year.
Let's dig in on Rubio a little bit. Effective field goal percentage for his career is 41.5. League average is 50. I mean, that's pretty terrible. Everyone talks about last year being so much better. It's still 44.8. How much of his shooting is a detriment to his game?
You're right in that it was the first year he managed to reach the 40% mark from the field. Before this season, I would have said a lot more than... the detriment was a lot bigger than it did at the end of the year. Tom Thibodeau, over the course of the season, talked about, you know, it isn't so much that him missing the shots was the problem. It's not taking the shots that the offense dictates that you should take when on the floor. That was the problem early on. But over the course of the year, you saw Rubio become more confident, giving what the offense gave him, taking shots within the system. There was the whole month of March where he was just, he made every other three, it felt like. So as he grew, it seemed as though Thibodeau became more confident in him as Rubio became more confident in himself, believing in the system that Thibodeau had worked all year to try to instill. So the percentages, as low as they might be and as unsustainable as they might be in Rubio's case last season, the percentages, yeah, they're low, but he's taking the shots that the offense and the system dictates that he should take. And as long as he does that, I think he'll be in the coach's good graces.
It's really, there's so many angles here. I have a big picture question in a second, but we'll stay in on the shooting. I mean, you're talking about that. What's eye-opening is that March, he goes 18 of 41. You're like, he's figured it out. He follows in April with 3 of 20 from three. And those are arbitrary dates, but it also shows, you wonder if that sample size had continued, that post-All-Star break three-point shooting, which I, myself, and a lot of other people kind of quote is, hey, well, he shot, you know, 35% post-All-Star break. Yeah, but that's 68 attempts. I have to admit, I have a feeling if he'd taken the, you know, 150 or whatever it is that is an actual sample size for half a season, it probably gets back to that natural number. Do you feel as though he really changed his shooting, or he just had a period of time where they went in?
Well, and here's where, if you start asking coaches around the league, I bet they would tell you that those numbers in March are definitely unsustainable. You remember Mike Penberthy was brought in to work mostly specifically with Rubio on his shot form and mechanics. And this year that Penberthy role was commandeered by Ryan Saunders. But mechanically, his form hasn't really changed. And the trajectory on a shot is what really should worry people most. That has not changed at all. In warmups, it's one thing, and he can do it in warmups, and basically every NBA player can do it in warmups. The arc is there. Noah is a trajectory reading system that the Wolves have in their practice facility that actually announces the degree that their shots are going in as they're taking them. So as they're taking these shots, they're hearing a machine say, you know, 45 degrees or whatever the angle is supposed to be. And so they're hearing when they're doing it wrong. And that's sort of supposed to drill their muscle memory into their, supposed to drill the muscle memory into making it, you know, repetitive and all one easy motion and translate it into game reps. But in the game, the arc on his shot is just so low. And that is the one thing that has never changed. So it seems that percentage wise, he just made more than he missed this year. And with as bad as he shot in seasons past and, you know, with all the injuries and the different variations of sample sizes, it was only a matter of time, I think, before he had a good year. So on one end, you can argue that, you know, maybe he's improving. But on the other end, and the safer bet, I think, is that he just had an above average season and, you know, almost got lucky, because I don't think you can see those results repeat over and over again in the coming years.
All right, big picture on Rubio, and then we'll dig into whether he's available, whether it's something the Jazz can acquire or not. I love Ricky. I'm a huge Ricky Rubio fan. Every time I watch him, I love him. Every time we call a game in which he's involved, I use plus minus to show his value. Though at times I wonder, is he the type of player that if you see four times a year, you adore him? And if you have him 82 times a year, you actually see the complete picture and you don't love him as much. What's your thought on that? Give and take on analyzing Rubio as a player?
As far as which side of the fence I sit on, I'm definitely pro Rubio. I think there are attributes to his game that you cannot quantify, such as where the ball lands in a player's hands after he passes it to them. Is it the same way a player would pick the ball up off the rack? I think Rubio does an excellent job of getting, you know, spinning the ball, as silly and tedious as it sounds, spinning the ball in a way that gets it to players where they want to catch it. So small little intricacies like that. Defensively, he's been known as sort of a gambler. I think that reputation was enhanced when Corey Brewer was on the team. Corey Brewer, of course, being one of the most notorious gamblers for steals in the league. But his discipline on the defensive end got a lot better this year. When the Wolves gave up points and Rubio made the right rotations and made the right plays defensively, you know, there were a couple times on the sideline where Thibodeau went up to him and said, hey, that's the play you should have made. Jay made the shot. That's all you can do. There is quite the dichotomy of Wolves fans, though, who, you know, we don't know how often they watch the Wolves. This is arguably the NBA's worst franchise. So when people say stuff about the Wolves, you sometimes have to take it with a grain of salt. But I think a lot of the people, especially the people who cover the team, Britt Robeson and Andy Grimsrud and all the guys over at Punch Drunk Wolves over there. I mean, anybody who covers the team sees Rubio putting in the work and all of the stuff that he does on the floor, and the way he handles the trade rumors and the consistent front office in and out cycle, and the way he's handled things during his time here. You can't help when you're this close but adore him. And so, as I mentioned at the beginning of our conversation, if the Jazz are looking to acquire him, this conversation might not end well in the Jazz favor.
All right, so let's run down it. The Wolves have a ton of cap space. They have three point guards on the roster, Rubio, Dunn, and Tyus Jones. They have the ninth pick of the draft, I believe. What do you believe that their what are they trying to do with this point guard position? Do you think it's Rubio's? How does Chris Dunn fit in then? Where do you think that this is playing out for Minnesota?
He's sort of the fruit that you can hang at the end of the tree for as long as possible, with the contract being as good as it is, the point guard situation being as unstable as it is. Sure, Chris Dunn was Tom Thibodeau's first pick. as the Wolves brass in the front office. But Tyus Jones, of course, was not his pick. Tyus Jones, I thought, could have played a lot more, but I think his ceiling is more of a backup player, definitely not a starting caliber point guard in the NBA. I think there's really no reason to move Rubio. There's no sense of urgency to move him as is. You can give Chris Dunn more time to develop, you know, sort of learn what you can get from him. Obviously, we didn't see a lot last year in terms of growth on the court, but defensively there are things to his game physically that Rubio cannot bring. And, you know, offensive mentality, driving to the basket, taking contact, finishing at the rim. I think there are, you know, those type of attributes. Chris Dunn is already much more advanced than Rubio is and will ever become. But, you know, I think they can play it safe. And in terms of, you know, leverage and negotiations, they can definitely take the stance of, hey, we've got sort of a point guard by committee system here. It worked out okay for us last year. Our bigger need to succeed and hopefully make a playoff push is definitely at the four position. So if that's the type of negotiation that we're going to have, it's that would be the type of asset, as from a Wolves standpoint, I would be looking to acquire if I am going to get rid of Ricky Rubio. Would be a playmaking four, not so much a small ball four, but a playmaking four.
Any truth to Derrick Rose?
I doubt it. Everything I've read has come from New York. Obviously, there's the Tom Thibodeau connection. But, I mean, did you see Derrick Rose's free throw rate this year? It was atrocious. It felt like he never took free throws, especially in the second half of the season. I'm personally not buying it up until we see anything happen, of course. There could be that possibility, but everybody was so certain that, you know, Jimmy Butler was going to be the trade last year during the summer, but I just don't think, from what I know, I don't think that any negotiation, any deal between the two entities that are Tom Thibodeau and the Chicago Bulls front office, speaking of Jimmy Butler, Derrick Rose is in New York, of course. I don't think that's going down, and I don't think the Derrick Rose thing is happening. That was a rumor purported back near the trade deadline, too. And, of course, where there was smoke, there was no fire. So I'm not buying it this time either.
Any reason why Minnesota wants more cap room to build this thing?
My guess would be because Thibodeau doesn't – I mean, this is not his roster. He inherited it. So it would be more flexibility. I mean, the guy's got a five-year contract, and there's no way Glenn Taylor's going to terminate it early. So as much of a rush as there might be from fans and, you know, people who do what we do for, you know, the want to make the Wolves a playoff team and the, you know, to end the drought, Tom Thibodeau can take his time in building the team and putting together the infrastructure that he wants over the next 5 years. And he has no reason to hurry because there's no way he's going to be terminated any earlier than that. So any additional cap space that Tom Thibodeau might want, he's certainly within his rights to do so. And I think I don't necessarily see that playing the game cautiously in a bad way. I just think he has earned the position he's in and has the benefit of the doubt. And if that's what he wants to do, take his time, build a roster, by all means, take his time and do it.
All right. So you have extensions up, I believe, for Wiggins and LaVine. Karl Anthony Towns the year after that. So there is a little bit. Rubio's money at $14 million next year and $14.8 the year after probably does not cause you any problems in that regard. The only other issue we haven't really discussed is there did some feeling that maybe Rubio got better because LaVine went out, and maybe they don't gel a great deal. If you're looking at the Jazz roster, what would perk you up? What would say, all right, we can start discussing moving Ricky Rubio?
George Hill.
Well, he's a free agent. Can't really trade him.
Oh, he is a free agent. Joe Ingles is an intriguing piece. I don't know if he necessarily warrants the value that trading a Rubio would. You know, the Jazz have some later picks in the draft, and from what we saw them use the picks last year, they're definitely more assets than they are picks. So, but I don't necessarily know if a couple of second rounders and a first rounder is, you know, from my perspective, worth Rubio. I just don't engage in that conversation. Trey Lyles is definitely a piece that they could use, as I mentioned before, a playmaking four. So somebody who, when the Wolves go small, Nemanja Bjelica didn't really get it done last year, and he's dealt with his fair share of injury woes. So a player like that, you know, Trey Lyles, Joe Ingles.
All right, let's play around with Trey Lyles. Joe Ingles is a restricted free agent, have to be a sign and trade. Let's play around with Trey Lyles for a second. I'm a big believer in Trey Lyles. I think he's going to be really, really good. I think he got the tough circumstance that he was a young player on a good team, and so therefore you don't get a lot of time to play. Does Trey Lyles, coupled with Jazz, actually with cap space, could just do Trey Lyles, Ricky Rubio. Does that get it done? Is it a Trey Lyles and a draft pick? What's your thought here? Lyles matches the timetable of the Timberwolves probably much better in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and there is the whole Kentucky connection too, and
Karl Anthony Towns. I think we're either roommates or best of friends. I think they're roommates.
So that certainly does add an element to the negotiation that would, you know, be fascinating if we were actually at the table. There are sides that would say, you know, do it. I believe the Jazz have 2 second round picks.
Two firsts and 2 seconds. 24 and 30 and 2 seconds.
In 2 seconds. So, yeah, I don't know where the Jazz stand. I don't know. It's tough to determine how Tom Thibodeau values picks yet, because he really hasn't made any deal for them and he's only used so many. So it's tough to determine how he values those. Perhaps he would be intrigued at the idea of a first and 1 or 2 seconds, whatever he can leverage, and Trey Lyles, depending on. I unfortunately haven't seen a lot of tape from Lyles as far as playmaking and defense, but I know he shot the ball well from three, especially during a particular stretch in the season, as I understand it. And the Wolves definitely need shooting. That is a skill that they lack. So I think that's where the negotiations start and end if any deal gets done. A first, 1 or 2 seconds, and Trey Lyles. I mean, it'd be really, really tough for somebody who's watched Rubio grow and deal with all this off-court stuff. I mean, let's not forget his mom died last year. He had to overcome that, too. So it would be really tough for me to part ways, but it's a business. And I think at the end of the day, depending on who the Wolves get in the draft and depending on what you see from Chris Dunn's development this season, that would be a trade that could get it done. Unfortunately, I don't think it could happen anytime. Sorry, there's a big garbage truck going by. I don't think it would be something that would happen before the season. I think that would be more of a trade deadline deal based on where the two teams stand at that juncture.
Well, the Jazz would have to be making it now. It would be all in line to try to save build a team for Gordon Hayward. I don't think this would not be a deal that by trade deadline the Jazz better have their point guard figured out.
Well, does that make the Jazz better in your opinion, based on what you've seen from
George Hill is a free agent. The Jazz at this moment don't have a point guard, and the issue is whether or not the Jazz want to go into free agency trying to negotiate with both Gordon Hayward and George Hill at the same time.
You see them both bringing both back.
I think they'd like to, but trying to get that done is very difficult. Trying to negotiate with two free agents at the exact same time is with each watching each other's moves, it gets to be a very difficult situation. So there's the exercise we're playing with right now is whether or not there's something the Jazz could do prior to July 1 to make a deal. The Jazz have enough cap space right now, as do, frankly, Minnesota. You could actually trade Trey Lyles, Ricky Rubio straight up. It would work because both teams have enough cap room.
Why don't we take it in a different conversation? What do you think of Zach LaVine?
I like him an awful lot. Coming off an ACL, wanting an extension gets awfully interesting. I actually was surprised you didn't bring up Rodney Hood because of Zach LaVine's injury.
See, the conversation this year, and I think it's an intriguing one, is LaVine and Wiggins. Are they redundant? Now, right away, you think to yourself, well, Zach LaVine, slam dunk champion, ace three-point shooter in a perfect world. Andrew Wiggins, you know, led the league in post-ups for a two-guard his rookie season. And a tough physical player, got to make some plays with the ball a little bit more this year, drives in the lane, which LaVine does not do. But where the redundancy comes in is at the defensive end. They're both very undersized to play the three. You know, can those two exist in a starting lineup against other NBA, you know, other NBA teams where they're going to be overmatched at the three position every time? So I think there's a carrot dangling at the end of the string, and the Jazz are looking for more guard help. I know Zach LaVine doesn't exactly fit the profile of a point guard. He's a very raw talent, didn't pick up basketball till his sophomore year in high school, played the point guard position his rookie year under Flip Saunders. Didn't look so well, but that wasn't exactly ideal circumstances either in his defense. I've asked Zach LaVine if he learned a lot about the game of basketball playing the point guard position, and he did, which inclines me to believe that he could learn a lot more, and stands to reason that he could improve at that position. But maybe that would be a route the Jazz want to go if they are intrigued. Rodney Hood, much like Trey Lyles, I haven't seen a whole lot of film on him, but I have seen some of the numbers, and I know he dealt with some injuries this year, but definitely an intriguing option. I think he has the size to play the three, definitely more so than LaVine. Maybe that's a route we could go in these negotiations.
Probably. I think we've probably come to the end of the road on LaVine's not an interest coming off an ACL because you're looking for someone who can play the point today. I don't think Rodney Hood's a three. So probably end of the road in some regards there, unless what we talked about earlier is the Trey Lyles Ricky Rubio moves the meter for both sides, opens up cap space for Minnesota, solves the Jazz need to have a point guard by July 1. But costly for the Jazz. Trey Lyles got a really big upside, but it's going to have to be costly for the Jazz.
Yeah, and he's got some upside too. Where I'm going is in the direction of no, simply because of the high, you know, the seventh pick that the Wolves have this year in the draft. Thibodeau can do his due diligence, go get one of his guys that he likes in the draft, try to mold them. I don't necessarily see Trey Lyles as someone, you know, he has googly eyes for and is willing to go out and make that deal and be proactive. But it is an intriguing thought, and it is definitely something I didn't expect to come up with entering this conversation. I'm glad we explored all avenues in this discussion for sure. But I think Thibodeau is more likely to take his chances in the draft and then go from there. Who knows what we'll see from Bielitsa. It'll be a contract year for him. He's certainly capable of shooting the ball well. Confidence has been an issue. Defense has been an issue, but there's always the chance that he could improve. I don't think we're ruling that out quite yet. So I think the Wolves are in a place where that deal doesn't do it for him, and it was a pleasure trying to do business.
Zach Bennett, Locked On Wolves is the show. He's the host. And the draft, the Jazz now have either, in your mind, listening to these shows, either not been able to get Goran Dragic, have done a Dante Exum deal for Eric Bledsoe, or a Trey Lyles deal for Ricky Rubio. Tomorrow we'll look at the possibility of the last resort with Toronto on this series. This has been Locked On Jazz on the Locked On Podcast Network.